Welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. You've got Logan Jones and Evan Knowles here. We've got some great stories to go over this week, most of them revolving around artificial intelligence. So no surprise there. We're going to omit the AI Edge segment since this entire episode is going to be very AI based. But before we get into that, you just got back from LA. How's your trip?
Really just got off the plane. I'm pretty tired. It was a great trip. Just went on a trip to the mountains above LA and Malibu and a place called Topanga. Relaxed and had a long weekend and had some fun in Los Angeles. So
that's awesome.
Just a little getaway.
And just for the listeners who might not know, you used to live out there.
I did. I lived out there for a bit. And I try to go back and hit my old favorite spots and just keep exploring out there. It's a pretty cool city.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and dive into these stories. So the three stories we're going to be discussing are going to be Microsoft and Meta announcing an expanded partnership around Meta's open source large language model. Apple is building its own AI framework, which is some pretty big news in the AI space. And then everything around the Hollywood strikes and how AI and streaming companies are playing into that. So before we dive into those stories, we just want to get a quick word from our sponsors. Before we dive into sponsors, please remember to subscribe to our channel, hit that notification bell, and follow us on all socials at Middle Tech Pod. Let's dive into it. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
All right, so this first story we're going over deals with two of the largest companies working in the AI space right now, one of which being Meta, the other being Microsoft. Meta has named Microsoft as its preferred partner for its open source large language model, Llama 2. So this is a big deal for a couple of reasons, but just to kind of recap some of the details of this story, they're expanding their partnership by, like I said, naming them as the preferred partner by giving access to this large language model via Microsoft's Azure cloud compute platform. And now what that actually means is that this Llama 2 large language model is going to be available for free for research and commercial purposes, and developers are going to be able to access that via the Azure platform. The other detail of this is that it's also going to be available via platforms like Hugging Face and Amazon Web Services as well. But let's kind of dive into why this is a big deal. So Evan, I wrote some notes down about this and we've kind of gone back and forth about it. Let's talk about why this is an important update here.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, the big thing here is that it's going to be allowed for commercial use. Facebook up to this point hasn't allowed that. And there's a ton of AI startups and people just wanting to experiment with these large language models that, you know, have been going to places like Hugging Face traditionally for more open source models. But the thing that's been hard to do is take it a step beyond experimentation and then commercialize it without having to go to one of the more expensive providers like OpenAI, Cohere, or Anthropic. Now, it's not crazy expensive, but if you start to want to experiment with, you know, large prompts and have a lot of context and really kind of build a very robust platform, you want to do that for free as long as you can. And so this is a pretty big deal that Facebook's opening it up. I think, you know, Llama 2 is definitely one of the better open source models that's out there. So we'll see how much it improves as people begin to build on it. But over time, I think that the fact it's free is going to put some pressure on, again, some of those ones that are charging for it, like OpenAI, because if it starts to have performance that's about the same as OpenAI or maybe just a little bit less, people might make that decision to say, hey, I'm going to go use Llama 2.
And I want to talk about the pros and cons of open sourcing some of these large language models as well. Meta specifically hit on some of the concerns within that press release that they put out about it. So I want to talk about that as well. But I guess some of the pros, just to start, around open sourcing is just really democratizing access to this technology. So, you know, some of the barriers of entry of, you know, building your own large language model are obviously just going to be training that model, having enough data to train that model, but also the compute power and being able to actually run these large language models is very expensive. So to be able to have an open source model that Meta has helped develop and is giving access to that is going to, I think, cause a wave of innovation because it's going to be much easier. The barrier of entry is much lower for startups to go and leverage this technology. Now, on the other side of that, you know, providing open source access to this is going to give rise to some other potential outcomes that might not be so great. So, you know, that can be things like misuse around creating deepfakes, using the large language model to do more nefarious things, you know, things like scamming and things of that nature. But Meta specifically kind of called those out within their press release, saying they're combating those, taking various precautions such as red teaming exercises. So that is like trying to attack the system and exploit the system, using hackers, both internal and external, to do that. They're also have releasing transparency schematics so they can kind of be very transparent about how the model was built, and then some responsible use guides and an acceptable use policy. So I think that is, you know, doing everything they can to try and curb some of the cons of having an open source model. But I think that is something that you kind of have to keep in mind. It's like once you release this, it's like opening Pandora's box. It's very hard to get it back in once you release some of these open source models to the public.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he's kind of flipping more towards open source after building a very closed source, very powerful social media platform. So it's an interesting just kind of dichotomy from where his mind has been up to this point. So I'll be curious to see what their long-term strategy is with these large language models, because they do have just as much data, if not the most data, of anybody on the internet, probably other than Google. And so they are definitely going to be able to really train these models. And so we'll see what kind of other services and other features they build into these models over time.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this next story. So Bloomberg came out this week and reported that Apple has built its own model for creating large language models, or its own framework, rather. And on that news, Apple stock went up to a record high of $198 based off that news. So Apple has really not been in the news too much as it relates to AI. It's been kind of absent in all the talk as Google, Microsoft, OpenAI have all kind of taken the lion's share of the news around the development of their models. And I think everyone has really been expecting Apple to do something within the near future here. So what Bloomberg has reported is that they've built their own framework to create these large language models, and that's called Ajax. And they're using that to build a chatbot service that is only available for use internally at Apple right now. So really what this story is all about is that they're starting to experiment with this internally. They're starting to you know, get into the AI space and start figuring out ways to implement that into their existing ecosystem. So Evan, go over some of these other notes that we have in here and give some of your thoughts around this story and how Apple is approaching this AI.
Yeah, well, I think the timing is, you know, not super ideal for Apple. You know, I think that, you know, when OpenAI and some of these others came out with their models, you know, maybe Apple was caught on their heels because they were in the middle of the AR kind of launch and their research and development into the headset. And this is, you know, a huge development. This AI stuff is something that they can't miss. So they're probably running these two, you know, large research and development projects within Apple simultaneously. And, you know, that's why AI just wasn't on the forefront as much as the headset was over the last several months. Mm-hmm. But I imagine it will be in the months coming. Apple's definitely going to make a really big play. And of course, it's going to be centered around privacy and kind of transparency into the data. That's why they're building their own framework, so they can control some of that stuff and make sure that their users are getting an Apple experience, not, you know, a Google or an OpenAI or a Microsoft experience. So they're really taking a very thoughtful approach on this, just like any other product they do.
Yeah, which I think is the right move for sure. I think that, you know, once Apple really figures out AI, they have, in my opinion, the most opportunity to really enrich people's lives with AI, because they already have the existing platform that so many millions of people are using. And on top of that, I feel like that kind of the next phase of artificial intelligence is more so like the execution of tasks. So right now, these large language models are great at generating content. I think kind of the next phase of that is going to be actually, you know, executing tasks, taking action in the real world. And I think Apple is well positioned to do that because we use our iPhones, we use our phones to do so many actions throughout the day already. So if you can kind of add that AI aspect to this. It could be as simple as, you know, you're texting with a friend to set up a time to hang out and it creates a calendar invite for you. You know, stuff like that is already kind of built into it, but doing it more seamlessly and having almost an AI assistant, I think Apple has a huge opportunity to make that work really well within the Apple ecosystem. So, you know, they kind of led that charge from the platform shift from desktop to mobile. I think once they introduce AI to that existing platform and ecosystem they already have, they're going to have the opportunity to be an even more massive company than they already are.
Yeah. And then if they can pull this off and have that large language model live on device,
right,
and, you know, have enough compute and memory on device to make these models work, and you don't necessarily even need internet access for these, that would be, you know, the game changer. That would be definitely the best play that I think the industry could have is, you know, we use our phones, they're attached to our hip, we take them everywhere. They're a piece of our biology at this point. So if they could just essentially give us that large language model any point on demand, no internet, just on device, completely private, that would be such an Apple thing to do.
Let's move on to this last story. One of the more interesting stories going on is it affects content creation and, you know, movies and shows that we all love to watch. And that is the Hollywood strike that's going on right now. So we really want to center the story around how artificial intelligence and streaming companies are playing into this Hollywood strike and kind of what that is all, what that's all about right now. So Evan, I'll let you kind of lead off this story here. Just because I know we were going back in a DM with some friends talking about some of the theories around what's going on at the heart of this. But let's just start by going over kind of a high-level overview of what this strike entails, you know, what the writers and the actors are actually asking for, and then we'll dive into how AI and streaming companies are playing into that.
Yeah, so with all this generative AI, you know, the price of creating content is going to go close to zero. And so actors and writers are starting to see the dangers of that. And so they're striking. And so they're worried that, you know, a large language model can write a complete script, which it can. They're afraid it can do it better than them, which it will. And then they're also afraid of essentially, you know, these deep fakes. You know, you can film a movie, you can do it in Unreal Engine, and then you can basically just spin up, you know, fake people within Unreal Engine or within some of these other, you know, really advanced visualization platforms where they make these movies and the CGI and things of that nature. So, you know, you normally would have, you know, of course, you have the stunt doubles, but now you've got, what are the name of the people that sit on the sides that are extras, yeah, right? And you know, they might even not hire, they might not even need to hire extras anymore because these generative AI models could probably create them, you know, in something like, again, an Unreal Engine. So actors are definitely really scared. The monetization model of the industry is also changing with streaming, and that also plays into AI. But why don't you get into kind of the streaming side of it?
Yeah. So on the streaming side of things, both, you know, writers and actors are wanting more transparency from streaming companies around viewership of the content that they're, you know, helping to create. And that's kind of where this gets interesting. There's some different theories that, you know, we've been talking about back and forth around why streaming companies are a little bit reluctant to do this. The streaming model obviously kind of flipped things on its head because it didn't, you know, you don't have to rely on ratings under a streaming model system. You can kind of, you know, focus on creating more content for those that are subscribed to your streaming service. You don't necessarily have to rely as much on viewership. But the reason that these writers and actors want to have transparency into that is so that they can better negotiate what they think their wages should be in relation to the viewership that that content is getting. So the theory that I've been referencing here, this is from Andrew Scholes. This was sent in a DM that we were discussing the other night. So he poses an interesting theory about the reluctance of the companies to share that data. He's basically saying that his suspicion is that viewership is much lower than what they would want to admit. And so what that would lead to is if they actually release that, you know, their stock price is very much tied to how successful the content they're creating actually is. So if they release that their viewership was much lower than what people think it should be, their stock price would likely crater, which would lead to budget cuts, which would lead to less gigs for these writers and actors. So I think that's a very interesting theory. It seemed like you kind of agreed with that when we were discussing it back and forth, if you want to give some thoughts around that theory. Again, just a theory, and this is, you know, just opinions, but I think it is interesting to kind of go down the thought hole here.
Yeah, I mean, the last 5 years have definitely, in my opinion, created a bubble. We haven't seen the bubble yet because, again, it's hidden behind streaming services. The bubble is essentially that all of these new streaming services that followed Netflix, whether it's HBO Max, Apple, YouTube, Peacock, you know, all of these new ones that popped up, they had to race as fast as they could to launch as much content that they could to attract people to stream on their platform. Mm-hmm. And so what that did was it created a bubble, an artificial need for content. It was artificial because there wasn't actually demand from consumers to say, hey, I want more content. They just had to create enough content to attract them to their streaming platform. Whereas before, we all went to, you know, cable, or we went to the movie theaters to see movies. But now, because it's all hidden behind, you know, just a subscription fee, we don't really think anymore about, you know, what kind of content we're watching, what the viewership of that stuff is. And so it's really easy to create a bubble. And so I think this theory is likely correct, that there's a lot less viewership on average across all the content on these streaming platforms than people would want to see. I would say it's actually probably pretty bad. And if that's the case, then yeah, people are going to freak out and wonder if these are sustainable models. The only company that's been able to prove profitability was the first mover, which was Netflix. Mm-hmm. All the other platforms, they're loss leaders for anybody that's launched them. But again, it was a race to just acquire users. And so they tried to create a bunch of content and attract a bunch of subscriptions. And if they're not profitable, I would say, in the next several years, then I'll be interested to see what happens to these. There'll probably just be consolidation.
Yep, for sure. I think the overall theme of this as it relates to AI that I think is really interesting is that I'm kind of predicting that this is just a glimpse of what's coming in the next few years as AI really starts to disrupt some legacy industries. So these writers and actors are kind of seeing the capabilities of generative AI, and they're rightfully kind of worried about their job security because of that. I think this is just one of the first strikes that is kind of a direct result of that disruption, or the coming impending disruption that's coming. It really hasn't even taken root, in my opinion. But I think this is just going to be the first of many, some others being things like the legal field, accounting, education, potentially. So I think we're just going to continue to see legal action around the impacts that AI is going to have on some of these legacy industries. And we're also going to see legal action taken against the AI companies that are actually enabling this, because in a lot of times they're going to be trained on content that people are going to be compensated for. So I think this is just kind of indicative of what's coming down the pipeline in the next few years as it relates to AI and disruption.
I think that actors have legitimate concern about their image and likeness, but I think the writers are going to be the ones in a really tough spot, because there's really no reason, if a large language model can write better than a writer, for the writer to exist, other than to proofread and maybe add their own little spice into it. But really, the days of writers on movies, if the large language models end up being better, which I would predict they will be, then I'm not sure what the writers have to fight for. I mean, at this point, they're just fighting to fight. That's my take.
Yeah, that's kind of a scary future. I would prefer, I don't know, this is just something beautiful about a human creating the art that is the film or the TV series. I think it's
just the current paradigm.
It is.
It doesn't matter.
It is the current paradigm. Anything else to add to any of those stories before wrapping up here?
Nope.
All right. We hope you guys have learned something from today's episode. Just as an FYI, there's not going to be a spotlight series this week. We're going to be sitting down and recording some more of those this coming week. So you can expect some more spotlight series coming up within the next few weeks. Other than that, we will talk to you next week. Thanks for tuning in.